Welcome to Met Clubhouse Confidential. I'm Rich Catino. And as the calendar keeps moving further and further into the first quarter of the year, out of the first quarter of the year, I should say, we get closer to baseball. And I know we all live in the New York area. There's enough snow on the ground that we think it's going to be there forever. But to hear spring training news from Port St. Lucie, I think, warms everyone's heart. And on the show tonight, you're going to hear some of the conversations I had and direct questions I had with Luis Rojas about his team. We're also going to hear from Aaron Loop. We're going to hear from Marcus Stroman and David Peterson as well. And they're going to talk a little bit about the mood of Met Camp with new ownership. They're going to talk about the roles that they all have and the fact that this Met roster is loaded. And before I get to hearing talking about all the players, when we come back from break, I want to talk about how the media and Twitter have it all wrong on the Met offseason. And have it all wrong. The Met offseason was scintillating. The Met offseason was a vast improvement. And if there's any criticism that needs to be levied on an offseason, maybe they need to look across the RFK Bridge to 161st Street and River Avenue. And we'll be back with that in a moment. We'll be back with more of Mets Clubhouse Confidential in a minute. But first, I want to talk to you about two of my most favorite things to do. And those of you who know me know this is the case. One is talk sports, and two is eat great Italian food. And I'm going to send you to places where you could do both of those things. First of all, the eating of the Italian food. St. John's of Arthur Avenue in Portchester, on Westchester Avenue in Portchester, right off the 287 Parkway, right up to Westchester Avenue. Go in, say hello to John for me, tell him Bridge sent you, and whatever it is you like. If you like Northern Italian cuisine, it's a great place to eat. If you like Southern Italian cuisine, it's a great place to eat. If you're more of a seafood eater, if you just want a slice of pizza, you want a nice Italian hero, or I'll call it as he calls it, a hoagie. a great place to watch sports too, as the restaurant has an addendum to it now that has a sports bar in there that can watch sports all night long. St. John's of Arthur Avenue. And if you're home and want it delivered to your house in this pandemic world we live in, stjohnsofarthuravenue.com. You can order it online and it'll be at your house before you know it. St. John's of Arthur Avenue. And of course, talking sports. We all love to do it. Anyone who's listening to this show loves to do it as well. And one of the great places to hear about sports, to read about sports, is the number one sports website in New York, thenewyorkextra.com. But it does far more than sports. It covers news and entertainment. And on the sports side, you get your Met stuff from me on it, but you also get so much more. You get coverage of the Knicks and Rangers seasons as they've gotten underway. And how the Jets are going to, what they're going to do with that second pick. In fact, in the coming week, me and Len Robbins are going to have a fierce debate as to what the Jets might do with that second pick. So, thenewyorkextra.com. Log on to it now, and you can talk sports. And if you're doing it from your house, at the same time, order food from St. John's of Arthur Avenue. You get a great Italian food in your home, you know, pandemic-free, and you're able to read about sports. TheNewYorkExtra.com and St. John's of Arthur Avenue, a duo that's very hard to beat. I've seen it on Twitter the last couple of weeks. I've seen it on talk shows. I've seen it on the rant and raves you hear on SNY that the Met offseason was disappointing. And the thing that people point to is they say, well, Trevor Bauer, JT Realmuto, and George Springer, we didn't get any of those top three free agents. And we have a new owner that says he was willing to spend money. And believe you me, the new owner has spent money. And he'll spend more money. But you can't just spend money recklessly. And what the Mets have done is they've taken a roster, which I think at the end of last season was probably an 81-win roster, a 500 roster, you know, in terms of what they had on the roster. And make no mistake about it, this Met roster is now a 90-win roster. And if the people that work in the media in this town want to criticize someone for an off season, they need to look no further than Yankee Stadium. I mean, when you look at the Yankees, some of the big problems they had last year was their bullpen was vastly overrated. And for the second year in a row, Aroldis Chapman gave up a home run to end the Yankee season. So we have that aspect of it. We also have the aspect of there were two defensive positions that the Yankees had to improve, and that was shortstop and catcher. So it really makes me stop and think, those three people that everyone says the Mets should have signed, Realmuto, Springer, and Realmuto and Springer and Bauer, all three of those players could have helped the Yankees. Probably Springer to a less extent. They have a really good defensive center fielder in Aaron Hicks. But an overpaid center fielder, I should say, also in Aaron Hicks. But the Yankees didn't go out and sign Trevor Bauer. They didn't even make an offer for Trevor Bauer. Instead, they decided to go the route of trying to get pitchers on the, quote, bargain basement price tag that are coming off injuries. And I'm not saying it was the wrong thing to do, but Bauer would have given them instant help. Because right now, the Yankee rotation is Gerrit Cole and a lot of question marks. But this show is not Yankee Clubhouse Confidential. It's Met Clubhouse Confidential. And I want to talk about what the Mets did. The Mets also got a shortstop in Francisco Lindor. And look, the Yankees had some issues last year, but one of them defensively was behind the plate and shortstop. Lindor could have solved that problem if they had traded for him. Then they could have moved, you know, Torres over to second and they even re-signed J.G. LeMayo to either play third or first. They didn't do that. The Mets did. And the Mets also got a starting pitcher in that deal, Carlos Carrasco. And when I look at this Mets starting rotation, the quintet that they have of DeGrom, Stroman, Walker, Carrasco, Peterson. And I'm not even counting Noah Syndergaard yet, who will be back probably sometime in the middle of the season. And I'm not even counting Seth Lugo yet, who'll probably be back sometime in early June as well. And yet, somehow, the pundits are saying the Mets didn't have a great offseason, and actually calling it Wilpon-esque offseasons. And nothing could be further from the truth. The Mets improved themselves behind the plate. They improved themselves in the middle infield, not only with getting Lindor, but now Jeff McNeil is replacing Robinson Cano at second base. They gave the roster added depth, both the 25-man and 40-man rosters. Guys like Almora and Pilar, they're going to bring speed and defense to this team, as well as a little offense. And the other part of it is to come. I think the next two steps the Mets are going to try to make sometime during spring training is to get extensions signed with both Michael Conforto and Francisco Lindor. The Syndergaard extension, they can think about once he returns and they get a look at how he's pitching. But I look at this team and I say they have as good a rotation as any team in the division. Probably better than every team in the division. They have an offense that is loaded and as good as any team in the division. But like most teams in the division, the big question is the bullpen. And the Mets added to the bullpen. They added two arms that are going to help them a lot in Trevor May and Aaron Loop. And we'll hear from both of them later on in the show. But I look at this roster and it's a 90-win roster. I don't know if it's a 95-win roster, but it's a 90-win roster. And a 90-win roster is going to get you into the playoff conversation on a regular basis. So I think that, you know, when you look at what the Mets did in the offseason, you have to take all that into consideration. I think the Mets had a great offseason, and I would much prefer to hear from players' opinions on that rather than even my own opinion. And Keith Hernandez said it best when he said, and I quote, "It's the best offseason they've had in years," end quote. And Keith knows about offseasons, and Keith knows about how teams get built. And when you look at this Met team, bottom line, they have the best pitcher in baseball in Jacob DeGrom. They have the best shortstop in baseball in Francisco Lindor. They have a budding batting champion in Jeff McNeil. They have a man who broke home run records in 2019 in Pete Alonso. They have Dominic Smith and Michael Conforto who've come to the forefront. They've added depth to the starting rotation. They added depth to the bullpen. They added depth to the organization in general. And how do they do all this? Because Sandy Alderson knows what he's doing. And I think we sometimes forget that Sandy Alderson was the general manager when the Mets won the pennant in 2015. The Mets won a pennant when the organization was in the middle of the Madoff mess. You can't minimize that and what that means to the organization. Yet we have a media that has to take pot shots at the Mets constantly, continuously. And I know some other things happened in the offseason with Porter and with Callaway, and those things are very important things to investigate. But overall, this Met offseason has been a terrific one. And it's making the fact that the 2021 season is going to be a real exciting one and a real competitive one in the NL East, which has a bunch of really good teams. And yet not one ounce of criticism for the Yankees. And the fact that, you know, yeah, they've won their triple-digit games in the regular season, but come playoff time, they haven't been able to get it done. And they've had trade deadline deals that they missed out on, whether it be Justin Verlander, whether it be, you know, whomever, whether it be Zach Greinke, whomever, whether it even be the Mets beating them to Marcus Stroman, who clearly would have helped them in the 2019 postseason. But we don't criticize the Yankees. In fact, when the Yankees go through seasons like they went through last year, people were actually espousing the notion that they were the little train that could compared to the Tampa Rays. And if I ran the Yankees, I just have one simple question for Brian Cashman. It's bad enough that the Rays, with their little payroll, beat the Yankees out in a 60-game truncated season, but you had another chance to beat them in the playoffs and didn't get it done. And I don't know, maybe that's the Steinbrenner family decided they've spent enough money on the team. But you're not going to hear anyone criticize Steinbrenner family. In fact, you're going to hear people say George Steinbrenner should be in the Hall of Fame when this guy has twice been involved in very shady issues, whether it be the Steinbrenner, you know, the Richard Nixon, you know, issue that he had, or the blackmail issue of Dave Winfield. Those are all terrible issues. And to me, probably are as bad as steroid use when I would come to evaluating someone's entrance into the Hall of Fame. But you don't hear anyone talk about that. You don't hear anyone talk about the fact that the Yankees haven't, forget winning a World Series, they haven't been to a World Series in over 10 years. And that hasn't happened to them as an organization in a century. And in fact, that only happened to the Mets one decade in their existence, the 90s. In every other decade of their existence, the Mets got to a World Series. And yet, none of that is ever talked about in the media. None of that is ever looked at. Brian Cashman just gets bouquets thrown at him at every turn. And the bottom line is this. There's only one general manager in this town that in the last decade has gotten his team in the World Series. And his office is at 126th and Roosevelt Avenue in Queens. It's nowhere near 161st Street and River Avenue. And that's my early take on spring training. We'll be back hearing from Met manager and players during spring training and some conversations and questions I directly gave to Luis Rojas right after this. We'll be back with more of Mets Clubhouse Confidential in a minute. But first I want to talk to you about two of my most favorite things to do And those of you who know me know this is the case. One is talk sports, and two is eat great Italian food. And I'm going to send you to places where you could do both of those things. First of all, the eating of the Italian food. St. John's of Arthur Avenue in Portchester, on Westchester Avenue in Portchester, right off the 287 Parkway, right up to Westchester Avenue. Go in, say hello to John for me, tell him Rich sent you, and whatever it is you like. If you like Northern Italian cuisine, it's a great place to eat. If you like Southern Italian cuisine, it's a great place to eat. If you're more of a seafood eater, if you just want a slice of pizza, you want a nice Italian hero, or I'll call it as he calls it, a hoagie. A great place to watch sports too, as the restaurant has an addendum to it now that has a sports bar in there that can watch sports all night long. St. John's of Arthur Avenue. And if you're home and want it delivered to your house in this pandemic world we live in, stjohnsofarthuravenue.com. You can order it online and it'll be at your house before you know it. St. John's of Arthur Avenue. And of course, talking sports. We all love to do it. Anyone who's listening to this show loves to do it as well. And one of the great places to hear about sports, to read about sports, is the number one sports website in New York, the NewYorkExtra.com. But it does far more than sports. It covers news and entertainment. And on the sports side, you get your Met stuff from me on it, but you also get so much more. You get coverage of the Knicks and Rangers seasons as they've gotten underway. And how the Jets are going to, what they're going to do with that second pick. In fact, in the coming week, me and Len Robbins are going to have a fierce debate as to what the Jets might do with that second pick. So, the NewYorkExtra.com. Log on to it now, and you can talk sports. And if you're doing it from your house, at the same time, order food from St. John's of Arthur Avenue. You get a great Italian food in your home, you know, pandemic-free, and you're able to read about sports. The NewYorkExtra.com and St. John's of Arthur Avenue, a duo that's very hard to beat. We are back on Met Clubhouse Confidential, and we talked to a lot of Met players via Zoom this week, and one of the players that had some real interesting things to say was one of the bullpen guys that the Mets acquired in the offseason, and that's Aaron Loop. And Loop not only brings the Mets a left-handed specialist, but as he said, with the three-batter rule, he's a lot more than that.
I actually like the rule for me because personally, probably the last 2-3, maybe 4 years prior to last year, I kind of got pigeonholed as a quote-unquote, you know, lefty specialist. But in the beginning of my career, I faced both lefties and righties, and I remember there were times I'd come in the game and there'd be nothing but right-handers coming up. So I knew I was capable of getting them out, and I'd done it in the past, but I got pigeonholed into this lefty specialist role. So the three-batter minimum kind of gave me the opportunity to prove to myself and to other teams that, hey, you know, this guy can get right-handers out too. You know, he has more value than just being a lefty specialist.
Loop went on to kind of talk about his relationship already with James McCann, who has shown his leadership abilities very early on in this camp, and talks about his relationship with McCann that has already been entrenched.
It was probably a couple days after the news came out that I signed. He had texted me, like you said, just kind of reaching out, saying welcome to the team, wanted to get to know him. So we've texted a little bit. I've talked to him a little bit since we've been here. Talked to him a little bit today after I threw a bullpen. Just to kind of, like you said, get an idea, get a feel for what I like to do, just kind of look forward to getting to work with him this season.
Finally, Loop talks a little bit about the Met bullpen, a bullpen that has a tremendous amount of talent in it, and he talks about how good the bullpen can become.
A lot of guys that have great stuff, some guys that are proven, and I'm just hoping to find my niche where I fit in a role and what they need me to do. But it should be a fun group. Like I said, they got a lot of guys with a lot of talent that know how to get some guys out. So it should be pretty fun.
The other guy that the Mets brought in the bullpen is Trevor May. And Trevor May is a guy that's got a tremendous amount of stuff, but he's also got a great attitude of performing any role that Luis Rojas has for him. And Trevor May talked about that this week from Port St. Lucie.
You've been given any kind of mindset from Louis on what your role is going to be in the bullpen and how excited are you to be in a bullpen that has this much talent in it?
I mean, it's an honor to be included with these guys. You know, a lot of guys who were either all-stars in the past or are going to be all-stars very soon. I mean, if we're just talking sheer size, it's the biggest group of guys I've ever seen. But, you know, a lot of talent out there. And in terms of role, I mean, I've been very, very fluid in my mindset there. I feel like in this day and age, it's really important to widen the situations that you think you might be in. I know that that's a way that I'm used. I know that strikeouts are a big part of my, my job. I'm usually called upon to go out and go get a guy without moving anyone on any bases. And I know that that situation might come earlier in games. I know that situation might be later in games. I know some guys need rest. I know that Hef is a big proponent of getting guys rest as much as possible and making sure that everyone is as fresh as possible day to day. And so that means some guys are just, they're not quote unquote out, but they're probably not going to pitch in their normal role. And that would slot me in there. And I know that that's probably going to be an element of it. I would not be surprised if we got some opportunities in the ninth this year. I would not be surprised if we got some opportunities in the fifth. And that's what I'm sticking with. And then as camp goes through and as we get into the season, it becomes pretty clear specifically what you're trying to do. Last year it was if 2, 3, and 4 are coming up third time through the lineup, there's a really good chance it's going to be you, Trevor. It's me and Tyler Clippard ex-Met. We knew that. We talked to each other, and we knew how we matched up against teams. A lot of times we guessed right who it was going to be. So you figure that out as it goes. But that's what I'm anticipating doing. But at the end of the day, I'm one of those guys that just looks you in the eyes and says, give me the ball. Let's get the job done. So if that manifests itself in a little bit different way than I'm thinking now, I'll adjust. That's how it works.
This is a Met team that has a lot of personality to it. And in a lot of ways, reminds me a lot of the mid-80s Mets. It has personality-driven players. It has players that are a little more quiet and a little more reserved, like the Michael Confortos and the Jacob deGroms of the world. But it also has some sterling personalities, and one of those is Marcus Stroman. And Stroman talked to us this week, and he talked to us about a bunch of topics, but one of the things he really talked about was the mood in camp.
The atmosphere that we've had in this clubhouse has been unbelievable between players, between coaches, between staff, regardless of anything that's going on outside of it. Steve Cohen is the man. I haven't had too many talks, maybe 2 or 3 with him in the beginning. And just to hear his level of excitement, how in tune he was with what was going on with the team, to just kind of hear his direction, it was very refreshing and awesome to hear. So I think anybody wants to play for an owner who's kind of all in as he is. You know what I mean? I think that's the goal for players is to have that wanting to go out there and perform and be great for their owners and the upper management.
Stroman went on to say that this Met roster is loaded.
I think we're unbelievable. I'm not throwing out anything because I know it's going to be headlines tomorrow. Stroman thinks this, and this. But I speak highly of our guys for a reason. I think we're unbelievable what we have. I think any team can always make additions, but I love our staff. I love our staff 1 through 5. I love our entire team, to be honest with you. If we're nitpicking, you can nitpick with any team and say, oh, yeah, it'd be better if we added this, and this. But let's be real here. Look at who we added in the offseason, and let's be thankful for that. Let's get the fan base excited and ready to play baseball for this year.
And finally, Stroman talked about his good friend, Pilar, who joined this team for outfield and roster depth and gave him a glowing recommendation.
Kevin Pilar has always been my guy, always been one of my best friends all throughout that whole Toronto Rain, we kind of came up together. He's an unbelievable competitor, one of the most fiery guys to ever go out on the field. He puts his body on his line every single play, no matter what he's going through, whatever injuries he's battling. He's going to go out there and give you 120% every single time. He's a grinder. He's a competitor. He's someone that you always want to have on your roster, and he's a wizard in center field. So I think Kevin Pillar is someone that does nothing but upgrade any roster.
We had a chance to talk to Luis Rojas a lot this week, as he would have a Zoom presser every day. And I asked him some direct questions that I thought were very important to figuring out. One is, David Peterson's role in camp. And we talked about that. I talked about that directly with Luis Rojas right here.
Hey, Louis, when you look at your starting rotation, and last year, I'm sure the evolution of David Peterson probably happened quicker than you guys thought it would. And you talk about that a little bit. And what your expectations are for him, a southpaw in your rotation, that's going to be real important.
Yeah, it's he did a great job, such a great job last year. And we were talking earlier today, and we were talking about some of the conversations that we had in the spring last year, and how excited we were. You know, I was to watch him pitch out there in the spring. You know, I want to see you competing out there. I want to see, and his poise, just, you know, how David is. It's great. You know, he pitched in the spring, he threw well, and then, you know, taking us to the regular season, you know, after Stroman opted out, and he had the chance, he came in, and he just stayed the whole time. Huh? I thought it's an amazing story. You know, his poise, his abilities, you know, the man that he is, and that he's still growing into. So now in the spring, my expectations is to see the same David Peterson, you know, the guy that's hungry, the guy that's humble, and we talked about this too, and, you know, the guy that's very talented. So, you know, going out there competing the same way and growing in this game, I think, you know, he's going to keep doing that organically because of how he goes about it.
And then Peterson told us what he thought about the competition that's brewing for the five spots in the rotation.
I want to come in here and do my thing and let the rest take care of itself. If I can however I can help the team win, that's what I'm here to do. I'm ready to go, like I said, and excited to be back in camp and ready to compete and get after it.
I also asked Rojas a little bit about the nature of the NL East and the fact that there are so many southpaws in this division that come to the plate that can drive in runs. Every team's got them. And talked about how he's going to try to fend that off during the season. Does he need a second southpaw in the bullpen?
One of the things all those NL East teams have that you're competing against is strong left-handed bats in the middle of their lineup. Does that mean you're going to be trying to cultivate a second lefty in the bullpen during spring training? You certainly have options on the roster for that. And how important is having that second lefty, particularly in the games against the NL East?
Hey, Rich. Great seeing you, too. It's always important to have lefties. We have a couple in camp, and we want to see, you know, on the roster we got Tarpley and Zamora and Lou. And we also have Blevins and Wendell. You know, Blevins is a veteran. I mean, you guys all seen Blevins pitch too. So we're looking forward to see them. But, you know, it's always good to have your lefties, guys that also have the stuff to get the righty, you know, especially with the three batter rule you have. There are some strong lefties in our division, but a lot of them too are followed by a righty. If you talk about, you know, you face a Harper and Hoskins waiting on deck, and, you know, or Real Muto, and you face a Freeman and you have an Ozuna waiting on deck, and so on. So it's, I think the guys that we have, they're also, you know, they have the ability to get the righty as well. They have the blend for it. But along with that, our right-handed pitchers too are pretty good against lefties, and they have stuff. So, you know, we still got to see camp. You know, you guys saw Aaron Loop last year. He pitched really good against both righties and lefties in his pitcher under the new rule. With a very good pitching team that was the Rays in a tough division as well. And we're looking to see everybody. That's what we're looking forward to. And then, you know, hopefully they get similar situations in camp, even though that rule is not going to be in play until I think March 14th or something. I want to be more accurate with that next time probably. But the lefties are always important, like you said. We're just going to pay attention to that as they get out left, they get lefties out, and also as they get righties out.
And then one of the final things this week I asked Met manager Luis Rojas is third base. Everyone's been talking about third base. Everyone's saying how the Mets need to go out and get a third baseman, how Justin Turner would have been perfect here, and let's trade for Chris Bryant. Let's trade for Chapman. Let's trade, you know, who knows? They might even want the Mets to trade for Brooks Robinson. But the bottom line is the third baseman for the Mets, in my humble opinion, is already on this roster. He's proven that he can hit in the clutch. He's proven that he can, you know, drive in runs. He's proven that he can run the base as well. He's proven everything that he can give them in terms of versatility position-wise. But some people wonder about his defense at third. I felt we had to ask the manager, Louis Rojas, what he thought about that, and he gave us a very interesting response.
Louis, when you look at your third base position, is it something that you would feel comfortable giving J.D. Davis that role day in and day out? And because offensively, he has contributed a lot over the last two seasons with this team. But what do you need to see from him defensively in a consistent basis to kind of let him claim that position on a day in and day out basis?
Hey, Rich. JD's done an excellent job at the plate. A lot of quality at bats in the last 2 years. On base a lot. He's hit for power. Very smart hitter. I think he's also helped with the growth of a lot of players' particular plans as well, and game preparation, as far as like knowing what the opposing pitcher has and how they attack. So, you know, he's been a great inclusion to the team, you know, in the last 2 years to help our hitting coaches do develop some of that. Defensively, I think he's come a long way. I mean, you guys remember we had JD play some left field in the middle of the season in 19, and that's not easy to do. And we had him working out, doing early works in the middle of the season. I mean, you usually take advantage in times like now in spring training to get guys early and maybe to go out there, do some drills, and maybe they have the day off, don't play, and you repeat it again the next day, and then you throw them in the game, and you experiment a few things, you know. But when you're in the middle of the season and you're going after, those wins, and you want to save the energy of the player, it's just tough to do it on a repeated basis, and he did it, and he played well for us. He held his own, and last year he came to do the same thing, and we ended up shifting him to third, and we found out that some of the work that he's done for to become faster in the outfield, cover more ground, get better reads, actually helped him to improve at third. And that's what he took into the offseason. That's what we expect him to bring into camp on Monday. And, we're going to keep working with him. Gary DeSarcini has been monitoring everything that he's been doing in the offseason. They have a great connection. I think with this work ethic, his baseball IQ, he can keep improving there. He has already shown it. And we want to keep his versatility high. Why not? There's always a great value where we can move guys around in a game or during the season to start and have a powerful lineup. But he'll be one of those guys at third base. That's where we expect to see him the most during camp.
When we come back, we will talk more about the Mets season upcoming. We'll kind of try to prep you on what's going to be going on in some of these spring training games, and how the DH or non-DH will play a big role not only to the New York Mets, but to all the teams in the National League East. And we'll be back with all of that right after this. We'll be back with more of Mets Clubhouse Confidential in a minute. But first I want to talk to you about two of my most favorite things to do. And those of you who know me know this is the case. One is talk sports, and two is eat great Italian food. And I'm going to send you to places where you could do both of those things. First of all, the eating of the Italian food. St. John's of Arthur Avenue in Portchester, on Westchester Avenue in Portchester, right off the 287 Parkway, right up to Westchester Avenue. Go in, say hello to John for me, tell him Bridge sent you, and whatever it is you like. If you like Northern Italian cuisine, it's a great place to eat. If you like Southern Italian cuisine, it's a great place to eat. If you're more of a seafood eater, if you just want a slice of pizza, you want a nice Italian hero, or I'll call it as he calls it, a hoagie. A great place to watch sports too, as the restaurant has an addendum to it now that has a sports bar in there that can watch sports all night long. St. John's of Arthur Avenue. And if you're home and want it delivered to your house in this pandemic world we live in, stjohnsofarthuravenue.com. You can order it online and it'll be at your house before you know it. St. John's of Arthur Avenue. And of course, talking sports. We all love to do it. Anyone who's listening to this show loves to do it as well. And one of the great places to hear about sports, to read about sports, is the number one sports website in New York, the NewYorkExtra.com. But it does far more than sports. It covers news and entertainment. And on the sports side, you get your Met stuff from me on it, but you also get so much more. You get coverage of the Knicks and Rangers seasons as they've gotten underway. And how the Jets are going to, what they're going to do with that second pick. In fact, in the coming week, me and Len Robbins are going to have a fierce debate as to what the Jets might do with that second pick. So, the NewYorkExtra.com. Log on to it now, and you can talk sports. And if you're doing it from your house, at the same time, order food from St. John's of Arthur Avenue. You get a great Italian food in your home, you know, pandemic-free, and you're able to read about sports. The NewYorkExtra.com and St. John's of Arthur Avenue, a duo that's very hard to beat. This week, I tried to take a look at the rosters of the National League East, and it's going to be a tremendous division. And with a 162-game schedule in force, they're going to have their normal 19 games in the division against all opponents. And for those of you who think that, you know, 19 games against the Marlins are going to be easy, and I'm picking the Marlins because that's who everyone has picked for the basement of the division. Those are going to be competitive, hard-fought games for every team in the Met division. The Marlins have some great young pitching. They all throw hard. They have great arms. They're a well-managed team. They're a fundamentally sound team. And let's not forget, they were a playoff team in the expanded playoff format of a year ago. So they got some real good experience there. I still don't think they will get out of the basement because I just think the four teams above them have better rosters. But games against the Marlins aren't going to be a cakewalk for anyone. I don't care who they are. And you look at the Washington Nationals and you look at the Phillies, and I think they have very similar issues. I think the lack of a DH is going to hurt the Mets, but I think it's going to hurt these two teams even more than that because the Nationals have some players on their roster that they acquired this season that I think are great hitters. But they were hitters made for some DHing during the season. You know, when you have a guy like Carl Schwarber who, you know, I think calling him an embarrassment of the outfield is probably pretty accurate. You have Bell at first, who, you know, is not the greatest defensive first baseman in the world, but they did re-sign Ryan Zimmerman. I expect him to see some time both at third and first. They still have a good lineup. They certainly have a good rotation, particularly at the top of it and the top trio that they have. I think the Met rotation is just a tad better because it's deeper down on the 4 and 5 spots. But I think that the Nationals, you know, have one of the, and Juan Soto have one of the great young hitters in all of baseball. They're a good team. I think they're likely not as good as the Mets and Braves, but better than the Phillies. And I think the Phillies' problems, you know, are not going to be in the lineup. They have enough bats in that lineup to score a lot of runs. And I think their rotation's pretty good. At least at the top of it. But as most teams in baseball, their issue is going to be the bullpen. It was last year. It will be this year. It'll be interesting to see how that all gets put together and how their team gets put together. And when you talk about the Atlanta Braves, I think you talk about a team that, you know, much like the Mets, has a very balanced roster. And I think what we're going to see come 2021 baseball season in the National League East is, I think, yes, it's a deep division, but I think we're going to see the return of the Met-Brave rivalry. And, you know, when you think about the Met-Brave rivalry, it was fierce in the late 90s, you know, turn of the century to 2000, 2001. I mean, it had so many individuals that had a tremendous amount of persona and personality involved in it, whether you're talking about Chipper Jones or Mike Piazza or John Rocker or, you know, Robin Ventura's Grand Slam single or the Braves winning division after division, which that streak wasn't stopped until Willie Randolph was the manager of the Mets years later after that. But that Met-Brave rivalry was intense. Met-Brave games at that time in Turner Field and Shea Stadium were intensely dramatic games. And that's what made the 9/11 game so intriguing and interesting. The first game back at Shea Stadium post 9/11 was a Met-Brave game. And you saw these two teams shaking hands before the game. Probably the last two teams you'd ever think would be shaking hands. And that includes the Yankees and the Red Sox. Bobby Valentine and Bobby Cox were very different and how they went about their jobs, and quite frankly, I don't think had much love for each other. But on that night, all those things were put aside. But my point is, that's what made it so shocking. You know, it would be, you know, it would be as shocking as watching the New England Patriots shake hands in a post 9/11 first game with the New York Jets, and seeing Bill Belichick shake hands with everyone on the Jets coaching staff. Of course, not bringing a camera with them to film the shaking of the hands, but nonetheless, the shaking of the hands happening. And I think that that's a good rivalry that never got a chance to get entrenched, much like the Met-Cardinal rivalry of the mid-80s didn't get a chance to get entrenched. And we saw them then play in the 2006 NLCS, but by then that whole Met-Cardinal rivalry of the mid-80s was gone. And I have a feeling it's going to be very dramatically interesting in the National League East this year to see a Met-Brave rivalry. I think you'll see a rivalry with the Phillies, too, and the Nationals. And the Nationals not only with the Mets, but the Nationals with the Braves. So there's a lot of inner rivalries in the NL East. But the Met-Brave one interests me because there's some history between these two organizations. And I think that, you know, it's going to be real interesting to see how that develops and evolves. Much like in the West, I'm going to be very interested to see how the rivalry between the Dodgers and the Padres evolves. And I think it's going to be an interesting thing to look at. The pundits and the people that the fan graphs of the world are all agreeing with me on what the Mets have done in this offseason. And I really firmly believe that, you know, when I try to look at it objectively on how the Mets are covered in this town, and I don't understand it. I don't understand it, how somehow there's this mentality that the Mets haven't won in so long when really it was 6 years ago they were in the World Series. 6 years ago is not 11 years ago. And how the Yankees kind of escape criticism in this town. And I've tried to kind of figure it out for the last few years. And it's a hard thing to discern because the Yankees have had some issues. You know, whether you want to talk about steroid usage or, you know, them trying to get out of A-Rod's contract. Lots of things that question you. You can even go back to the Clemens Piazza tete-a-tete and say, how are the Yankees not criticized in this town for having a pitcher throw at someone's head and then throwing a bat at him in the World Series? How is that not ever kind of looked at? How did Roger Clemens not get suspended for that? How did he get away with it? How did he get away with perjuring himself on the stand? But we hear everything about the Madoff-Wilpon thing. Now we're hearing these latest things about more financial, let's just say, introspective reporting on the new Met ownership. And I just don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair at all. And history has shown us that teams that win 100 games don't always get a pass in this town when they don't win in the playoffs. And I'll point to the 1988 Mets. And in fairness to the 88 Mets, they already had a world championship 2 years before on their resume. That team won 100 games, and they got beat by a team that was just Destiny's Darlings, the Dodger team. And that Dodger team was a fun team to watch. There's no doubt about it. But all I heard when the Yankees lost to the Red Sox, and even to a certain extent the last two losses to the Astros, was, A, I heard, well, they had a good season, they won 100 games. B, I heard the Astros were cheating. Well, I got news for you. The Astros were cheating in 1986. We all know that Mike Scott was scuffing up balls. And yet the Mets found the way to keep their resolve and win the series with a dramatic Game 6 win over that Astro team and then beating the Red Sox in the World Series. And I don't know how much we still know about the cheating. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't understand that Gerrit Cole, who's the Yankees ace, was on that Astro team. Did he know anything? Did he know anything that was going on? Has anyone ever asked him that? Has any Yankee reporter ever asked Gerrit Cole that? Now there's this story about the cream. The cream that you put on a, was put on a baseball. And not only is Gerrit Cole involved in that, potentially at least, but so is Corey Kluber. And yet you don't see anything written about it. You don't see anything reported about it. All you see reported about in baseball is how the Mets are still will punish in how they're spending money. Well, I look at the Met payroll, and in fairness to the Will Ponds, they didn't always have a small payroll. There were times when they were one of the top three or four teams in payroll in a number of different times in their tenure as Met owners. So let's not go crazy with that. But this Met payroll is in the top fifth of the sport now. And to say that the Mets should have signed George Springer, you can't just look at these decisions in a vacuum. And I don't know about you, but the Yankees also have, well, oil her about the Bobby Bonilla thing. Mets are still paying Bobby Bonilla. They'll be paying Bobby Bonilla forever. Okay. Yankees are still paying Jacoby Ellsbury. And we know that Brody Van Wagenen got the Mets out of the Cespedes contract. And it was conducive for both parties because both parties would have had things revealed that weren't, let's just say, very nice to their reputations. Yet the Yankees still pay Jacoby Ellsbury. Jacoby Ellsbury may have refuted the contract too. I'll tell you why. Because Brody Van Wagenen had a great relationship with the Players Association, being a former agent. And he got it done. Did Brody Van Wagenen make mistakes? Sure he did. But let's reverse the situation for a minute. Let's say the Yankees got out of the Jacoby Ellsbury contract and the Mets were still stuck in the Cespedes contract. All we would be hearing is, how can the Mets not do what the Yankees did? Yet, I haven't seen one article that asked why the Yankees couldn't do what the Mets did. And here's the final thing. The Yankee organization always evaluates themselves on win or bust. And I don't agree with that contention because I think teams can have successful seasons that don't win championships. For example, I think the Rays had a tremendous season last year. I think the Oakland A's had a tremendous season last year. I think the Toronto Jays had a good season. And obviously the Miami Marlins. None of those teams won championships, but they all had what I would call successful seasons. So I don't agree with that contention, but you can't make that your mantra, making you this, you know, prototypical organization that we all aspire to be, and then not go to the World Series. Forget win the World Series, not go to the World Series for 11 years, and really not make it an issue in covering the team. But making it an issue on a team that went to the World Series 6 years ago, went to the playoffs the following year, and is never given any kind of credit for that. Isn't given credit. I'll even go further than that. When the Mets played the Cubs in the National League Championship Series, they swept the Cubs. Not only did they sweep the Cubs, in none of those four games did the Cubs ever have the lead. You want to talk about a destruction? That's a destruction. And that's a pennant. And it's the National League Championship Series. So there's only been one New York team that's had a championship in the last 11 years, and it hasn't been the Yankees. I know that it's part of the way things are covered in this town. I know that the Yankees are viewed as this pristine, kind of angelic cathedral. And a lot of people view the Mets, let's criticize Citi Field. Let's criticize the fact that the Mets gave Jackie Robinson a rotunda. Well, given the events we've had in this country in the last couple of years, maybe the Wilpons had much more foresight in doing that than anyone else has. And my point on the whole thing is the amount of help and that the Mets gave the communities during 9/11, all that gets kind of wiped away in the history of a franchise. And yeah, the Yankees have 27 world championships. We all know it. The Yankees have had great players, Ruth, Gehrig, DiMaggio, Berra, etc. But when you talk about the history of an organization, the 69 Miracle Mets and the Bill Buckner moment are two of the things that even casual baseball fans understand and remember. So this is now an organization that has no history. This is now an organization that has no historic moments, whether they be the game after 9/11, whether they be, you know, 69, whether they be how in 1973 they went from last to first in a month in the division. You know, there are moments and players that have graced the organization that should be admired. But I've come to accept the fact now as a 60-year-old man that the media will never cover these teams on a level playing field. It's never going to happen. And that's why the Mets have to ignore it. And Met fans, I include in that Met Nation, have to ignore it. And understand that on the field is where it's at. And get back to the playoffs. And this is a roster that can do that. So the criticism of the Mets, the poking fun at the Mets, Met fans, my greatest advice to you is it's noise pollution. Ignore it. Don't let it infect you. It's a pitch in the dirt. Don't swing at it. Don't swing at it at all. And I will continue bringing you the true story of this team and this organization. But understand this, Met fans, as spring training games will start in a week or so. This roster is a roster that can win. It could win right now. Can it get better? Can it improve? All rosters can improve. But Marcus Stroman is right when he says this has created a positive framework within the organization. And my advice to Met fans is don't let anyone try to bat that down in your mind. Don't let anyone try to minimize it. Don't let anyone try to, you know, unsupersize it, so to speak. understand that your roster is one of the best in the National League, if not the best, and you're headed for a great season. We'll be back with more of Mets Clubhouse Confidential in a minute. But first, I want to talk to you about two of my most favorite things to do. And those of you who know me know this is the case. One is talk sports, and two is eat great Italian food. And I'm going to send you to places where you could do both of those things. First of all, the eating of the Italian food. St. John's of Arthur Avenue in Portchester, on Westchester Avenue in Portchester, right off the 287 Parkway, right up to Westchester Avenue. Go in, say hello to John for me, tell him Rich sent you, and whatever it is you like. If you like Northern Italian cuisine, it's a great place to eat. If you like Southern Italian cuisine, it's a great place to eat. If you're more of a seafood eater, if you just want a slice of pizza, you want a nice Italian hero, or I'll call it as he calls it, a hoagie. A great place to watch sports too, as the restaurant has an addendum to it now that has a sports bar in there that can watch sports all night long. St. John's of Arthur Avenue. And if you're home and want it delivered to your house in this pandemic world we live in, stjohnsofarthuravenue.com. You can order it online and it'll be at your house before you know it. St. John's of Arthur Avenue. And of course, talking sports. We all love to do it. Anyone who's listening to this show loves to do it as well. And one of the great places to hear about sports, to read about sports, is the number one sports website in New York, thenewyorkextra.com. But it does far more than sports. It covers news and entertainment. And on the sports side, you get your Mets stuff from me on it, but you also get so much more. You get coverage of the Knicks and Rangers seasons as they've gotten underway, and how the Jets are going to, what they're going to do with that second pick. In fact, in the coming week, me and Len Robbins are going to have a fierce debate as to what the Jets might do with that second pick. So, thenewyorkextra.com. Log on to it now, and you can talk sports. And if you're doing it from your house at the same time, order food from St. John's of Arthur Avenue. You get a great Italian food in your home, you know, pandemic-free, and you're able to read about sports. TheNewYorkExtra.com and St. John's of Arthur Avenue, a duo that's very hard to beat. That's about all the time we have for this week. Till next week, we'll have more stuff from Port St. Lucie and the Mets spring training games beginning. We'll probably talk a little bit about that as well. And that'll be next week on Met Clubhouse Confidential. Till then, stay safe, stay healthy. Remember your social distancing. Remember your wearing of a mask. And try to get that vaccine if you can. Stay safe and healthy. And we'll talk to you next week on Met Clubhouse Confidential.